Justice, however late, is still justice, according to Bill McCumber, an aging Arizona man released from prison on November 7, 2012, after spending more than half of his life behind bars. Convicted of a double homicide in 1975, McCumber has maintained his innocence for 37 years. The new book, Manifest Injustice, the true story of a convicted murderer and the lawyers who fought for his freedom, by Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Barry Siegel, is the first in-depth account of McCumber's case and chronicles all that can go wrong and did when justice fails. We welcome Barry Siegel to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Nice to be with you, Joe.
What brought you to this case initially?
Well, it was really a fascinating moment in the story. Bill McCumber had already been in state prison for many years when he filed a petition before the Arizona Executive Board of Clemency at the start of 2009. This was very extraordinary to begin with because Bill McCumber then and always had insisted on his innocence. And to see clemency, you essentially are asking for mercy, saying that you are expressing remorse and you have been rehabilitated. He couldn't do that, obviously, because he was claiming innocence. And yet the Executive Board of Clemency granted him a hearing and then, even more remarkable, issued a unanimous opinion that he should be released immediately, and not on a basis of mercy, but because of a miscarriage of justice. This was unprecedented. It sure caught my attention, as did the next step in the story. Governor Jan Brewer in Arizona rejected her board's recommendation. That got a lot of press attention, and that pulled me into the story.
The evidence linking him to the crime was always questionable. What was it 37 years later that finally brought his release?
Well, he had been the Arizona Justice Project had been fighting for a dozen years on his behalf, and over much of that time was trying to prepare a petition for post-conviction relief that they could file in Superior Court, trying to get at least an evidentiary hearing. The problem is that to do this, you can't just say, "Hey, he's innocent." You have to cite new evidence, and you have to suggest that new evidence would have swayed a jury. So for 10 years, the Justice Project labored on this case without quite getting there. Some changes in our knowledge of forensic science was one reason that they finally were able to file the petition just late last year. And then, lo and behold, very unexpected, a Superior Court judge granted them the evidentiary hearing that they were seeking. That was a long shot just to get the hearing. But what happened then is, by granting the hearing, that put pressure on the state. They knew if they lost at the hearing, Bill would walk free because all the evidence had long ago been destroyed. So this forced the state into a plea bargain agreement in which Bill McCumber could plead no contest, which allows him to maintain his innocence and walk free. It was a remarkable outcome.
The crime was committed in the spring of 1962. It was a brutal murder of a young couple, and the bodies were found in the Arizona desert by a school bus filled with kids.
Right. It was out in the remote desert, Scottsdale area, north of Phoenix. The crime went unresolved. No one was arrested for a dozen years. During that time, a man named Ernest Valenzuela 6 times confessed to the murders to his lawyers. During that time, another witness, young woman Linda Primrose, came forward to say that she was at the murder scene with a man named Ernie. The jurors in the case never heard about Ernest Valenzuela, because the judge wouldn't let his attorneys testify. Attorney-client privilege prevailed over a search for truth.
How much of Bill McCumber being arrested came from the fact that his wife, his ex-wife, who was a clerk in the sheriff's department, came forward and said that her, well, I guess they weren't divorced. He was estranged husband, had confessed to her about the murders.
Yes, this obviously, this is how Bill got pulled into the story. I think we should first say Bill at this point was a pillar of the community, father of three young sons. He was the president of the local Little League. He had created a desert search rescue team to save people lost in the desert. He was a leader that people in his community came to. So it was pretty extraordinary when his estranged wife, who was a clerk in the sheriff's office, Maricopa County Sheriff's Office, came forward 12 years after the murders to say that her husband, her estranged husband, had confessed to the crimes. This is how Bill McCumber ended up being arrested.
What is it about a case like this that gnaws at attorneys and different organizations and parties where they say, look, a lot of people say that they're innocent, but we believe this person, the evidence isn't there, and we're going to work very, very hard for a very long time to try to see justice prevail?
Right. Well, of course, the question you asked is very, very good, because this is what drew me into writing my book. I was fascinated by the commitment of the Arizona Justice Project. They're a nonprofit group, don't have a lot of resources. They can't just take on any and all cases. They've got to really pick their shots. They can't tilt at windmills. They can only take the cases that they truly believe in, that are cases of either actual innocence or manifest injustice. And even then, they can only take those in that category that they think they can win. So I was fascinated that they were what I called their ceaseless quixotic compulsion to defend McCumber. I think what haunted them, first of all, the idea of those confessions by Ernest Valenzuela, the idea that attorney-client privilege prevented the jurors ever to know that another man had confessed to the crimes. I think that the fact that all of the day of the arrest, Bill McCumber was held by the sheriff's deputies and interrogated for 16 hours without being tape recorded or stenographer or any notes taken. The estranged wife coming forward, she had not only worked in the sheriff's department, but she had taken lessons in how to lift and transfer fingerprints. Bill himself. He's sort of kind of a Birdman of Alcatraz kind of prisoner, a remarkable record, his 38 years in prison. Became beloved by the guards, by the other inmates. He started a prison chapter of the JCs and was named president, JC President of the Year. I think a lot of these elements of the case and of Bill McCumber himself is what drew the Justice Project in.
He walked out of prison at 77 years old, and you can say, obviously, that it's a good thing if he's innocent that he's freed, and obviously good work for those who work so hard for his freedom. But, I mean, it's still a tragic story that more than half of his life was wasted behind bars if he's innocent.
It's a horrible story, and I think that it points to even more troubling issues beyond Bill McCumber's case. This is the tip of the iceberg. I think a lot of us have the impression that what goes on in a courtroom is a pristine search for truth, and it simply is not. If you've ever looked at done an anatomy of a case like this, what you see all the time is a lot of murky, contradictory evidence, and then you see competing narratives. That's how it works. It's an adversarial system, competing narratives in the courtroom, and then finally jurors and a judge decide which competing narrative they're going to call the truth. I think that there are a good number of innocent people in prison who we don't even know about because in most cases there is no DNA. We hear about the DNA exonerations. There's been about 300 so far. Bill McCumber's case did not involve any DNA, and most cases do not. So this is emblematic. As unusual as Bill McCumber's case is in the details, it's still emblematic of the criminal justice system.
And at 77 coming out, I mean, obviously it's a victory, but now what? You know, you have to ask the question of how does someone then regain any semblance of a life after what he's been through?
Yeah, well, you know what? Surprisingly enough, he's doing just fine. I actually have talked to him a couple of times since he's been out of prison. He's given me a couple of calls, which is unusual. I'm so used to having to write him in prison and remember what his Department of Corrections number is, and he now can pick up the phone. He's living in a remote ranch area in New Mexico with his cousin, his first cousin, who he is very close to. It's like they're more like brother-sister. They grew up together. He has been reunited with one of his sons who came forward when he heard about the Justice Project's efforts. All three of his sons he'd lost track of. They went off with their mother. One of them reached out. So he's got a son, he's got grandchildren, he's living with his cousin. When I talked to him on the phone, I asked him, Bill, must be really hard to adjust, though, after 38 years. He said, you know, it's not nearly as hard as you think it is.
Something you can get used to.
Something he could get used to, exactly.
The name of the book is Manifest Injustice, the true story of a convicted murderer and the lawyers who fought for his freedom. The book is published by Henry Holt. Barry Siegel, a great pleasure to have you on the program this morning. Thank you very much for sharing with us.
A pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. Again, the title of the book, Manifest Injustice. It is published by Henry Holt. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.